From WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 1,500 feet in the air, a deep, deep Arizona gorge right beneath his feet, no net. Nick Walenda walked a quarter of a mile on a high wire last weekend. 13 million people tuned in to watch. A seventh-generation member of the Flying Walenda family, Nick has tightropes, human pyramids, and wheels of death in his blood. This hour On Point, the king of the high wire, Nick Walenda. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation never ends. Can you imagine walking on a wire 1,500 feet in the air for a quarter of a mile without a net? Is there something in the DNA that sets these risk-takers apart? And joining me now from Sarasota, Florida, is Nick Walenda, world record-setting high wire artist. He's the seventh generation of the famous Flying Walendas. His new memoir is Balance, a story of faith, family, and life on the line. You can find an excerpt from the book and see an amazing video of some of his amazing walks that are not for the faint of heart. I warn you, they made me feel positively vertiginous as I looked at them last night. But they're on our website, onpointradio.org. And Nick Walenda, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
I've been really looking forward to this conversation. I want to ask you about that walk across the Little Canyon Gorge there near the Grand Canyon last week. What was the most challenging aspect of that walk?
Well, I would say it was the winds. All along when we did the studies for the last 4 years, we knew we had several, we had a lot of unpredictable winds. And that was always the concern. We knew that it wouldn't be over 60 miles per hour, which is why I trained in my hometown of Sarasota in 91-mile-an-hour winds, just so I know I was prepared for more than I was going to face out there. But they're so unpredictable, the directions of them. There's a lot of updrafts, and with heating and cooling of the canyons, it changed directions. And again, that was probably the most challenging part of that walk.
Mm. We've got a little bit of tape that I want to play. This is from the Discovery Channel, and it's of you and your dad, Terry Trofer, who we can hear talking to you and you responding to him. And you make reference of the challenge of that wind. So let's listen for a second.
How's that reacting now, Nick?
I'm not liking it.
Yeah. Good. I know it's
oh,
not-
Lord. Thank you, Jesus.
Okay. Yep, that's it. You're doing right. You're doing good.
Lord, help this cable to calm down. Command it in your name, Jesus, with the authority of God. Praise you. Praise you, Jesus.
So there's a recording of Nick Walenda, who's my guest this year. That was during his walk across the Little Colorado River Gorge near the Grand Canyon just last week, 1,500 feet in the air. We hear you, a couple of things I want to ask you about that cut, Nick. We hear you saying, get that cable to calm down. What's happening to the cable? What do you mean by calm down?
Well, what happens is you can build a rhythm in that cable. And if you noticed on that walk, I stopped twice to kneel down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because there's no stabilizers on that cable whatsoever. The only thing that's there is those pendulums that are hanging underneath. And those are simply to keep the rotation of the cable calm so that it won't rotate out from under my feet and twist. So being that there's no stabilizers, there's no shock absorbers, if you understand. As I walk, I can build a rhythm in that cable.
Mm.
And that rhythm will get bigger and bigger if I don't slow down and stop. So,
and so
every
the rhythm causes
that
the
I
cable,
make,
it causes the cable to sway or go up and down?
Both. So every move that I make will actually react. The cable will react to that. So it's important that I slow down, speed up. That's why I stopped a couple times to kind of take that rhythm, that vibration out of the cable and let it calm. The winds, however, caused me to balance. If there were no winds, I would have just walked across that cable and as daintily as possible to not put any rhythms in it. But because there was so much wind, I was having to react to that, which was causing major, major waves in that cable, which was just uncomfortable to walk on. And again, it was the winds that were causing that wire to move more than anything.
You know, when I was watching that clip last night, I was struck by a couple of things. I mean, first of all, just the sheer terror. I was terrified watching you, even knowing that you made it. But I was struck by this really sort of profound counterpoint to the sort of terror of the event. Your dad's steady, calm voice.
Yeah, it's important that he is. He is that voice of reason. He's the one who makes the final call on whether I'll make that walk or not. He walked a wire for over 30 years of his life and understands the situations that I'm in. And he has to be that voice of reason. He has to be that calming voice, soothing voice to keep me calm and relaxed as I make that walk.
Yeah. The other thing we hear in that is expressions of your religious faith, which you write a lot about. You're asking there, Lord, help this cable to calm down, command it in your name. And I want to ask you a question about your faith. And I mean, I ask this with all respect in the world, but someone hearing that might say, well, Jesus, you know, has done a lot to protect you and keep you safe, but you're the guy who decided to go out on that cable.
That's correct. In no way does God keep me on that cable. I'm always very adamantly clear about that, including in my book. The fact that God doesn't hold me on that cable. God's given me a unique talent. It's whether I prepare or train properly for that. But God, in my beliefs, in my heart, I know that God controls the weather and the climate, and he has full control over that for sure.
Listeners, we're talking to Nick Wallenda. His book is Balance, A Story of Faith, Family, and Life on the Line. He set all kinds of records doing amazing high wire acts across the world. Craig is calling from Wilder, Vermont. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Congratulations to you, Mr. Wallenda, for your amazing feat.
Thank you.
I've watched both Niagara Falls and Grand Canyon, and I just don't know how you do it, and that's the question I want to put to you. I'm just curious, is there something in your family history that about your physical vision, your eyesight, that makes it possible for you to do such a,
well
amazing
thing? I don't think so. I think that, we have done some studies, and they do say that there's a gene that they call a Wallenda gene or a daredevil gene, but it's been deemed a Wallenda gene, which is, the fact that, as we talked about on the show, my heart rate actually slows down when I get in those situations rather than speeds up like most, like you would think. But really, it comes down to training and practice. And in my, I strongly believe that anyone in this world can do anything they want if they set their minds to it, if they dedicate to it, and if they're willing to work hard enough at it, you can accomplish anything you want in this life. And I've spent a lifetime on a wire. I started walking a wire at the age of 2, about 2 feet off the ground. By the age of 4, I was on my own. And I say that because my mom assisted me at the age of 2. She would hold my hand. By the age of 13, I was walking on my own.
It's amazing. Talk about the training, because another thing that comes across really clearly, Nick, when I look at those clips, when you get to the end of these walks, I mean, you're spent. You look calm. You're taking sort of small, almost dainty steps to get across there. But this is a real physical workout, isn't it?
It absolutely is. There's so much. It's more mental than physical at this point. Again, I've walked a wire most of my life, and performed in front of an audience most of my life. Started performing in front of an audience at 2 as well, but as a clown, not on the wire. And 13 was actually my first performance, not the first time I was walking on my own. But it really is something that we've done so long. It's what we have passion for. It's what we love to do, and it's hard for people to comprehend. Why do you get up on a wire? But again, it is our lives. My great-grandfather Carl Wallenda said it best. He said, life is on the wire. Everything else is just waiting. And it's actually nearly as comfortable for me to get on a wire as it is to walk on the ground, because I've only walked on the ground a year longer than I've walked on a wire. So it really is life. It's not an occupation. It's something that I love doing. It's like people who go mountain climbing, rock climbing, that go, sailing, whatever your hobby would be. This is our hobby. This is what we love to do.
Let's go to John, who's calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, John. You're on the air with Nick Wallenda.
Hi, how are you? In the lead up to the walk, to fill the time beforehand, they showed that your great-grandfather had knelt down and lost his balance in Rio de Janeiro. Did that cross your mind when you first knelt down?
It did not. The second time it did, and only paying tribute and respect to him, it was actually in San Juan, Puerto Rico in 1978. He was walking between two buildings. He was 73 years old and had a double hernia and an injured collarbone. He is my hero, my inspiration behind everything I do, but he should not have been on a wire. He had no business being on a wire. He should have retired much younger. I've trained my entire life to reach down to that cable and grab it no matter what. I would wrap around that cable. I would bear hug it, wrap my legs and arms around it, and that's a safe haven. I've trained to hold onto a cable for 20 to 30 minutes while I'm hanging there, waiting for rescue. And I have rescue teams that are trained to be at me within 60 seconds, and it's well rehearsed. So people don't comprehend. They think that because we're so much higher that it's so much more dangerous. But the truth is that wire's always at my feet, and it was at my great-grandfather's feet when he fell and lost his life. He went down and did everything right. However, the wrong thing that he did was that he was still walking. If he was my age, there's no question. And I have actually gone back and completed that exact same walk in that exact between the exact same two buildings in Puerto Rico, along with my mom. She walked out to the middle, sat down. I stepped over her, and we walked into other ends. But I think of my great grandfather during every walk that I do. And that second time I knelt down, it was more of a I was kneeling down to take the rhythm out of the cable, but it was a time where I could look down and I kind of reflected on him and just thought about him and the fact that everything I do is really to pay tribute to him.
We're talking to Nick Wallenda, the king of the high wire. He's just come out with a new memoir called Balance, a story of faith, family, and life on the line. You can join the conversation. Does Nick Wallenda inspire you to take more risks in your life? Do you see him as a hero, a nut, maybe a little bit of both? I'm Anthony Brooks, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with record-setting high-wire artist Nick Wallenda about life, faith, family, and balance. His new memoir is called Balance, a story of faith, family, and life on the line. And Nick Wallenda, just before the break, I wanted to ask you that question about your great-grandfather. You saw a video of him falling to his death. That might have been enough to dissuade a young boy from the family business. Why didn't it dissuade you?
You know, as I said before, this is more of a lifestyle to us. It's really hard for people to comprehend, but I was raised doing this. Mm-hmm. It really is who I am. And to see that video, again, it's not as though we see that and say, well, he fell to his death. And of course, that could happen to any of us. But in my opinion, a police officer's job is more dangerous than what I do because I'm very much in control of what I do. My great-grandfather only lost his life because of his age and his physical ability. He went down to the wire, which is exactly what I would do. Gravity pulls you down. I never will walk a cable ever where there are winds. Of course, winds are unpredictable, but we did a 4-year study out at the Grand Canyon showing that the winds wouldn't exceed 60 miles per hour. I would never walk a wire where the winds would be strong enough to pick me up and throw me off of that wire, actually physically pick me up. Yes, they're gusts. Yes, they push you to the side, but not enough to knock me all the way over. I would actually go down, grab that wire, and hold on for safety. So in my opinion, what I do is extremely calculated. I've trained actually in winds of 120 miles per hour in the past. I've walked the wire in 70-mile-an-hour gusts. Leading up to this event in my hometown here in Sarasota at Nathan Benderson Park, I actually walked on a wire with 45 to 55 mile an hour gusts, which is what we knew I'd experience out there, as well as 90 mile an hour winds on a cable rigged the same way that moved the same way. I practice catching. I have safety crews standing by. So, again, what I do is calculated. A police officer, he's not in control of that criminal when he pulls a gun or pulls a knife on him. He's not in control of that. So I feel like I'm safer than they are, but hard for you to comprehend. But again, I've done this my entire life, so I'm very comfortable with it.
Sure. I want to play another piece of tape from your walk across Niagara Falls. In June 2012, you became the first to complete a high wire walk across the falls. And just past the halfway mark, this is a 1,800-foot crossing, you spoke to ABC News about how the walk was going. Let's listen.
You know, I'm strained. I'm drained. You know, this is so physical, not only mental, but physical. And fighting that wind isn't easy. And my hands actually at this point feel like they're going numb. I feel like I'm getting weak. And, you know, I'm just looking at that prize on the other side. And, you know, that anticipation is building. And I just want to get in there. I want to get through that home stretch and hit that finish line.
Earlier in that tape, we hear you say, you know, I'm strained, I'm drained. This is so physical, not only mental, but physical. We talked about the physical challenge of doing this, but I was really struck by the fact that you're out there over Niagara Falls being interviewed. How do you stay focused?
I think that, again, speaks to how long I've done this. Yeah. There's often times where I'm in the backyard training on a 10-foot wire and walking back and forth and my kids will get in an argument. I'm you know, disciplining them from the cable. It is, again, it's about spending time and doing something over and over. You, of course, you get more and more comfortable with it. I've only walked on the ground a year longer than I've walked on a wire. So it's, again, it's something that I've done so long that I'm just extremely comfortable. I'm able to answer questions. And it is physical, it's mental, all of those as well, but something that I've done just for a long time.
Let's take a couple of calls. We're talking to Nick Walenda of the Flying Walendas about his amazing high wire walks. Let's go to Dan, who's calling from Georgetown, Mass. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony, and hello, Nick.
Hi.
I watched that live, and it was quite amazing.
Thank you.
My family and I have watched the Walenda family do their thing at Topsfield Fair in Massachusetts for years now.
Sure, that's my uncle and his family.
Excuse me?
That's my uncle Tino and his family. That's another branch of the family, yes.
Yep, well, I've watched them for years, and that's always a great time. And, you know, it's great to see this art form get this kind of attention, because the physical and mental ability that it takes to do something like that. I mean, I'm in pretty decent shape and everything, and I love mountain biking and that kind of stuff. And I think I'm kind of crazy sometimes. But to see that kind of focus where, you know, most people, even if they had a decent amount of training at that height with any kind of wind and anything, I could see them just melting. So to be able to channel everything in your body and have that kind of focus and attention is just amazing, and we hope to see more of that stuff.
Thank you so much. Actually, Discovery Channel this Sunday at 8 p.m. is going to air a special called Nick Talks the Walk, and I actually am sitting there. It's the first time I've ever seen the walk on film over the Grand Canyon that I did last Sunday, and I'm going to commentate on it, and I'm going to talk about exactly what I was feeling at those points. So you can kind of tell mentally where I was at and how I'd prepared and how preparation and training was so key to that, to making that walk successful.
Mm-hmm. Dan, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Gary, who's calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Walenda. I appreciate you. I just first want to say that in watching you walk, it generated the same feelings I had when I watched man's first walk on the moon. The incredible focus, it just blew me away. But then what I found myself realizing was that I was praying with you. And I've got to believe 13 million people were praying every prayer and every praise that you uttered. Help me understand how you blend your human focus with your faith to persevere and do what you just did.
Well, you know, the Bible says that God provides a peace that passes all understanding, and I really lean on that verse often. And that's really where I find my peace. I was raised in a very religious household and studied the Bible growing up. And whenever there are any issues, I think we're all kind of guilty of that, you know, and I guess guilty isn't maybe the right word, but, you know, if there's drama, we go to God and we talk to God and, you know, and lean on him. And that's what I do when I do these walks. That's where I find my peace, is I talk to God. And that's how I stay calm, cool, and collective. Often, I actually sing, you know, praise and worship songs, because it just keeps me calm, cool, and helps me focus more than anything.
Gary, thanks so much for that for that call. Nick, I want to ask you about that walk across Niagara Falls. ABC really insisted that you actually wear a tether for the first time. You argued that NASCAR faces more fatalities than high wire walkers, but ABC didn't budge, and they didn't want to broadcast the walk without that tether for fear that it could result in your dying. Tell me about that decision and the challenge that it adds wearing a tether, or why you resist wearing a tether.
Well, there's many parts to that question or answers, but the reason why we don't use safety devices is I was always raised that it was a false sense of security. Mm-hmm. And that was because my great-grandfather Carl had an older brother who walked the wire, who fell into a net, bounced out, and was killed. And I've seen many, many videos of people falling into nets, bouncing out and being killed, impaled by their balancing pole. If you have a tether, it can get wrapped around you, tangled up. It can actually cause you to fall. So there's many dangers with that. My biggest fear of the walk over Niagara Falls was that tether getting caught up. Mm. It was something that was brought on to me. I had a contract with that network at the time. And they brought on the fact about 2.5 weeks before that walk saying you're going to have to wear a tether. It was almost unfair because this is such a mental game. I prepare mentally years in advance for this. And the way I a lot of it has to do with meditation and visualizing myself crossing there. I'll sit at, you know, I sat at the Grand Canyon for 4 years in different periods of time throughout those 4 years looking over the edge. And as I looked over the edge, I would envision myself crossing. And to add something in the mix that weighed 13 pounds that I had to drag behind me that I'd never done before is extremely uncomfortable and extremely stressful. If I'd trained my whole life for it, it wouldn't be a big deal. But that's why I ended up finding a new network partner. It was important to me. I told my managers after the Niagara Falls was such a huge success, had the best TV ratings in the last 7 or 8 years, I believe, as far as live specials go. Because of that, I said, look, let's go find another network for the next one. I want to do the Grand Canyon, but it's not about money. It has nothing to do with money. As long as the walk is paid for, that's all I care about. Matter of fact, Niagara Falls, I barely broke even on. As long as the walk's paid for, find a network that's going to allow me to do this without a tether. There's a long enough delay. There's backup programming. We've got things set up where you would never see that. It would be blanked out if that ever came to that. However, I wouldn't do what I did if I thought it would come to that. We've learned again from past experience, my great grandfather, that I'll retire at a young age. I plan on retiring from wire walking by 45, 50 at the latest. But again, that tether is just something that is very, very uncomfortable, something that I'd never done before. It'd be similar to me saying, hey, you're going to drive in New York City today, but you're going to go in reverse the whole way through the city.
Yeah.
It would be very, very unique, very uncomfortable, and very mentally straining when what you're doing is already mentally straining.
Nick, I'd like to ask you about what's the sort of worst or sort of most surprising, unexpected event that you've encountered out there on a wire? We've talked about wind. When you went across Niagara Falls, there was mist, moisture. We talked about wind over the Grand Canyon. What else has surprised you that's perhaps been, you know, even a bit of a challenge out there?
Really, it is the weather. We train for worst cases. Matter of fact, when I trained here in Sarasota, I trained with during Tropical Storm Andrea, which was a torrential downpour and 51-mile-an-hour gusts. For about an hour and a half, I was on that cable. And all of that is mental, more mental preparation. But the more time I spend on that wire in those unique, rough conditions, the better it, you know, the better I become on the wire, and it prepares me. But it's always weather. That's the unknown. The only thing that was ever unrelated to weather that was a kind of a, I had to take a deep breath. My heart jumped a little bit. Was when I was breaking a world record in 2008 in Newark, New Jersey, live on the Today Show. And I had walked across. I was 135 feet up. It was a distance of about 235 feet. I walked halfway out, sat down, called Matt Lauer on my cell phone, and spoke with him for a few minutes, got up, walked to the other side, and got on a bicycle on the wire. Three quarters of the way through that, I was through the downhill part. Every walk that I do has a catenary in it, which is an engineering term for basically a smiley face, drops down in the middle, starts high on both ends. I made it downhill, three quarters of the way uphill, and that back wheel started to slip on me.
Oh boy.
And that was the only really rigging-related thing that was like, oh my goodness, that wasn't right. For the most part, it does have to do with weather. Our rigging is so key. My great-grandfather, if you watch that video, and if you watch videos of the walks I've done since then, and actually I did an analogy that we filmed for the Discovery Channel of how his wire was rigged improperly. When you walk a wire like that, when you rig a wire like that, you should have you're supposed to have stabilizers on that cable. About every 30 feet, there's a rope coming off right and left that are tied directly to that cable, and they go down to the ground. Well, for some reason, the riggers that rigged that cable for him, my father wasn't available to rig that time. He was home with my mom. She just had a miscarriage. My uncle, who was his other head rigger, was out in Hawaii at the time, I believe. So they weren't there. So he had some of his other guys rig this cable. And instead of tying those stabilizers directly to the cable itself, they dropped down vertical about a foot. And then they had a Y out. So it's basically an upside down Y. Mm. Well, the upper part of that Y, that makes that cable move a lot. There's a lot of slack. It's not stabilizing it properly. So as he walked out, the wire started to move. Now, he hadn't trained on a wire like that. He'd trained on a wire that was always stable. If he'd trained on a wire like that, he would have been okay as well. But he did what we're all taught, which is go down to the safety of the wire. The wire is your safe haven. It's always at your feet, no matter how high you are. You can hold on and wait for help, or you can slide down the ropes. There's many, many different ways that we practice, different procedures to get down. Well, he did that. He sat on the wire, and that's where his age came into play. Mm-hmm. There's rumors that, you know, there's doctors that have watched that video that think that his heart just couldn't take it. As you get older, your heart can't take that adrenaline anymore and the amount of blood that's trying to pump through your heart. All of that came into play. And again, we've learned that there's a time to retire. Mike, we have lost other family members to the wire, but generally involving like a pyramid where there's seven or eight people on the wire at a time. Never have we lost anyone other than my great-grandfather doing a walk like what I did over the Grand Canyon last week.
Listeners, we're talking to Nick Wallenda. He's got a new memoir out called Balance, A Story of Faith, Family, and Life on the Line. We're talking to him about his amazing high wire walks, most recently 1,500 feet in the air above the Little Colorado River Gorge in Arizona, right near the Grand Canyon. Let's go to Rob, who's calling from Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, Rob. You're on the air.
Anthony, thanks for such a great interview.
Sure, you're welcome. What's on your mind?
So many of us are afraid of little things like taking a test or speaking in public or going on a date. Could you give us a short course on how to have more confidence?
A short course on how to have more confidence. We could all use that, Nick.
You know, it really, you know, the confidence that I have really comes from, a lot of it comes from my faith, to be honest, but also the fact that I've done what I do for so long, and that really helps. Anyone who gives public, you know, speaks in public will tell you, stand in front of a mirror and talk over and over again. It's all about practice, repetition, and that helps build that confidence a lot. And again, a lot of it just comes from my faith that, you know, being confident in who I am.
So personal confidence, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I want to play a piece of tape just this past weekend when you completed that walk across the Little Colorado River Gorge. Here was an interview with the Discovery Channel with your wife, Erendira Wallenda, talking about how nervous she gets about what you do.
Oh, I'm so relieved. I can finally, like, breathe again.
Were you nervous when you saw him just kind of take a breath and step down to the wire?
I had no idea what was going on. I saw him go to the wire, and I was like, oh, no. I started freaking out because I didn't have binoculars or anything. I was just praying.
Compared to the Niagara Falls walk, was this one a lot more stressful?
I think they're equally as stressful. You know, my husband's risking his life, so...
That's Erendira Wallenda, Nick Wallenda's wife. I need to ask you about that. She's in the family business too, right?
She is. My wife actually comes from the third oldest circus in the world in Australia. She's eight generations on that side of the family, the Ashton family. And then the other side of her family, she actually is seven generations, the Vasquez family, who are the first family to do the quadruple somersault on the flying trapeze. So we met each other. Actually, my parents were performing with her parents when her mom was still pregnant with her. And then I think 2 weeks old was the first time we met each other and grew up together traveling. Her parents and my parents performed together, as did our grandparents perform together.
And you proposed to her on a wire. Do I have that right?
I did. I was in Montreal, Canada performing. We closed the show with a seven-person pyramid. And my entire family went down off the wire and I had a microphone on. She was in the audience, and I walked out to the middle of the wire, and I knelt down and asked her to marry me.
And
no pressure. 30,000 people, and thank God she said yes.
I was going to say, what would have happened if she had said no? That might have been, that might have been the walk you never completed. Who knows?
That probably would have been.
Well, Nick Wallenda, what a pleasure. We're talking with the high wire, Nick Wallenda, about his record-setting feats. Jason is calling from Boston. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. How you doing? Great interview. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. What's on your mind?
And hello, Nick.
Hey, how you
doing? How you doing? I'm an escape artist. I actually hang upside down in a straitjacket from a high distance, wherever they put me. I go by the name Jason Escape, and so I can relate a lot to what you do. And I have a couple of questions about that. I'd like to rack your brain for a second. Harry Houdini said that accidents can happen, but they happen when least expected. In other words, the unprepared, the things that we cannot prepare for, that's
right.
Big question mark that always hangs over us when we do what we do. What are your thoughts about that? How do you deal with those?
Well, that's absolutely right. You know, I always say that the you know, even the Grand Canyon walk, it's the unknown, the unseen, which is that wind. That's the unpredictable. I can train for everything else. I can train to walk a wire. Matter of fact, during training here in my hometown of Sarasota, I walked on a cable multiple times the distance. So I would walk 4,000 or 5,000 feet on a cable for training so that I know that I was overprepared as far as endurance went. I trained in winds of 91 miles per hour for this event on that same cable. I trained with wind gusts of 45 to 55 when we knew they would not exceed 45 we knew they wouldn't exceed 50. So really you can prepare all you want, but that is what an accident's called an accident. It's the unknown. Mm.
Jason, thanks so much for that question. Nick, I want to ask you about sort of the family business and how at one point it seemed like it was almost slipping away. And you write about this in your book. Even when you stepped on the wire at age two, the circus life was slipping away from your family. The Wallendos were facing financial ruin. They had little hope that your generation was going to follow in their footsteps
That's right. Actually, my mom published a book when I was younger called "The Last of the Wallendas."
Well, because exactly.
They thought it was over.
Yeah. So how did you all recover?
No future.
Yeah, go ahead.
My mom and dad thought there's no future, and they really pushed me go to college. There's no future. There's no hope for our industry. You know, this is it, and that's why that book was titled that. So. I had so much passion for it. I started performing on The Wire at 13 and performed, and I talk a lot about that in the book on how I had so much passion for performing. But I actually applied for a college and got accepted and was planning on going to college to become a pediatrician when I turned 19.
Hmm.
And that was when I got a phone call from my uncle, and he said, "Hey, Nick, we've been invited to go to Detroit, Michigan and perform the 7-person pyramid for the first time since it fell back in 1962. And I thought, you know, he said, "Do you want to be a part of it?" I said, "You know, absolutely." After I thought about it for a bit, I talked to my parents. I said, "You know, this will be my final goodbye to The Wire. I'm going to walk. We're going to do the 7-person pyramid. We're going to regain this legacy. We're going to show the world that we never give up." And that's really my mantra, never give up. We're going to show the world. We're going to prove it to them. I'm going to go to college. I'll become a pediatrician. Life will be great. And I'll give up performing. And we got to Detroit, Michigan, and I looked around and I did an interview with just about every media outlet, it seemed like, in the world at the time, but hundreds of interviews. And I thought to myself as I sat there, and I remember just sitting there in the bleachers, I can still picture myself there and thinking, I don't think our future's dying. I think it's just the industry is changing. And at that point, I made a commitment. I said, I'm going to continue this on. I love performing too much. I'm going to continue it on, but I'm going to do it in a big way. My great-grandfather, Carl, was extremely successful, and he did many amazing walks around the world, including Vet Stadium, which is a dream of mine to start doing baseball stadiums and football stadiums. And he did walk over Tallulah Gorge, which was 700 feet high and 1,200 feet across, and really, really pushed the limits. And I made a commitment at that point that I was going to do things in a big way. And within 3 years, I led my family over to Japan, and we did the 8-person pyramid on the high wire, which had never been done before. 4 layers, 8 people high for Guinness World Records, and just continued to push the limits. At this point, I'm at 8 world records and continued to do things that were unique, that were different, but always to pay tribute to my family. Matter of fact, one of my world records is not even high wire related. I hung by my teeth under a helicopter at 280 feet. And the reason why I did that is I was visiting my grandmother, and I looked on her wall, and she has a photo on her wall of her hanging by her teeth under a bicycle, but on a wire. And I thought, you know, I want to pay tribute to my grandmother, but I want to do it in a big way. And how do I make that unique? And how do I take it into this new century? And really, it was about reinventing the wheel, if you will, and taking old, which is, again, and making it new and making it creative and bringing it to modern times.
Well, quite a feat, hanging by your teeth from a helicopter. We've got a couple of questions from our website. Here's one from Emily 4HL. And this is with regard to your walk across the Little Colorado River Gorge in Arizona last week. How do you feel about the Discovery Channel's constant emphasis on danger and death? As a viewer, I was much more interested in human skill and human achievement than the possibility of seeing someone die gladiator style on live TV.
Well, I think it really I haven't seen the entire special yet, so I'm actually looking forward to it. But that is part of our human nature and our human psyche. There are a lot of people who watch NASCAR not really to see the winner, but to see if there's an accident in the process. Mm. I think that's just kind of a lot of people are made that way. And I can understand that. I think what I do is extremely intriguing to many because here I am doing something that you think is impossible, and here's a man who's going to prove that it's not impossible, that he can do it. Hopefully that's inspiring more than anything. But of course, that danger aspect, it resonates with a lot of people in the world, and I think that that's an important factor to what I do and what my family history is. It doesn't offend me in any way. It doesn't bother me. And again, I understand that that is part of what I do, and I respect that.
Yeah. Patty is calling from Lawrence, Massachusetts. Hi, Patty. You're on the air with Nick Walenda.
Hi, Anthony. Hi, Nick. Nick, Hi. You probably don't remember me, but I knew you when you were a very little boy. I knew your sister, Liana, and your parents, Delilah and Terry. And at that time, it was about 1984, your parents performed over my restaurant in Concord, New Hampshire. At the
You know what? I honest to goodness remember the nachos. I swear to you. Did you have? Did you do video rental stuff as well?
Yes, I did. I had a video store. And,
so I remember you very well then. I remember all the Winnie the Pooh videos I used to rent all the time.
Well, Patty, it's great. It's great that you're making this connection. Do you have a question for Nick?
I have a comment for Nick. I knew from the time you were a very little boy that you were very focused and that you were going to do great things. You and your sister Liana were delightful children. And, you know, I love your mom and I love your dad. And
thank you. I'd love for you to get in touch with us again, through Facebook or something. We can connect.
Okay, I'll do that.
Please reach out. Yeah, just Nick Walenda at Facebook or Nick Walenda at Twitter, and we'll connect.
Patty, thanks so much for the call. Nick, I'd love to ask you another question about the family business. You're the seventh generation of the Walendas who've been doing this kind of thing. Is there ever pressure? Has there ever been pressure within the family to do this?
You know, it's funny. It's quite contrary to that, believe it or not. I think that's where it speaks volumes of the fact that people say it's in our blood. But if anything, and I talk about that a lot in my book as well, Balance, is the fact that my family pushed me away from it. They told me not to do it. They told me to go into a different industry. There was no future. That was dangerous. There was too much involved, too much of a pain to do. And I couldn't give it up. I even tried. I was accepted at college. I was, fairly good academically in school and, had planned on going a different direction, and I couldn't give it up. And I think it just speaks volumes to the fact that it really is. It's in our blood. I've got three children, though, and I think part of it is any entertainer will tell you once you're in front of a live audience, it's hard to give that up. Well, I started in front of a live audience at the age of two. I was a clown. It was in SeaWorld in San Diego. I came out in a pillowcase. The clowns would carry me out behind their back and dump me out in the ring, and I would just goof off with them a little bit. And so I had that bite at an early age. But with our kids, me and my wife, we have three kids, 15, 12, and 10, two boys, and my daughter's the youngest. We actually have never allowed them to really get in front of the audience. My daughter did for about a week, and that was it. My daughter is definitely the one that's the entertainer out of all of them. She's a ballerina, though, so she's on stage doing that. But I never wanted them to get that itch. I wanted them to be able to – I feel like I didn't have the decision because I had that bite at a young age. Not because my parents told me, but I love that applause. I fed off that applause. My kids, we've done the opposite. We've really kept them out of the spotlight. I don't mind them being seen on TV and such, but all of them are really good on the wire. My 15-year-old, I was doing a photo shoot for the front cover of a magazine recently, and we had a 2-foot wire out on the beach here in Sarasota, Florida. And he jumped up on that wire and was walking in between his shoot. And I tried to knock him off, and I couldn't knock him off, which is a game that we play as a family. We play chicken on the wire and stuff. But I was amazed how good he was.
Wait. What's the game called? What's it? Chicken on the wire?
We play chicken on the wire. Yeah, exactly.
Of course you do.
Playing the pool or whatever. But it's amazing how good they are on the wire. However, if you ask them, he wants to be a theoretical physicist, which don't even ask me what that is. My other son wants to be a brain surgeon, and my daughter wants to be a veterinarian at this point. Of course, they're a little bit young, but, the 15-year-old's starting to lean, make serious decisions. And I'm happy with that. Their college tuition is set aside. And to be honest, I'm as happy as any parent would be. I want my kids to be happy in their decisions, and I want them to make their own decisions when they become adults.
Nick, let me ask you another question, though, about your family. We heard a moment ago, we played that tape from your wife, Erendira, about how nervous she was watching you do this walk last week or across Niagara Falls. Do you have a routine that you go through with them before you begin an act?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that people don't realize is when we went up to the edge there of the canyon for that prayer circle, that was the first time my wife and kids had ever even been to the Grand Canyon. That's the first time they'd ever seen it right then, that moment on camera when we walked up. And the reason why I do that, and not to keep away from the Grand Canyon, but the actual site that I walk on, is because I don't want them to have that pressure until, if they are going to be nervous, I want it to be extremely minimal if they're going to be worried. So really, their nerves didn't kick in until they got there and saw that. They know their dad's ability. My kids, as a matter of fact, I was told, I haven't seen again the entire video, but for the most part of that walk, they were texting, looking down at their phones. I did a walk over the Allegheny River in Pittsburgh about 3 years ago, and during that walk, I was about 250 feet high. It started raining. It was windy, and it was rigged very uniquely, so I was a little bit nervous about it. My wire shoes, I had to walk in my socks. The cable had grease on it. There were a bunch of things going wrong. Very nervous. And as I walked, my kids were on the right side of me walking down the bridge, and I looked over to them and looked down, and they were all playing their Nintendos. They weren't even looking up at me because they were just like, Dad's just doing his thing. That's what he does. I'm sure there's nerves, especially as they get a little bit older, that they get nervous. But they also know my ability, and it's so important for me to have them there to be my strength. I need that. I need that support from them as much as they need me to stay strong and confident leading up to these events.
Let's go to another call. Dave is calling from Berlin, Massachusetts. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi there, Nick, Anthony. Thanks for the call. In short, I would like to let Nick know that the Walenda name in our family has been nothing short of a touchstone for 40 to 50 years. My father was a great, great fan of yours, as was my mother back in the 60s. And long and short of it was, and is, anytime one of us kids was faced with the impossible, anytime we needed to summon our inner strength, anytime we felt like we couldn't go on, my dad always said, you've got to find your inner Walenda.
Oh, that's great.
And
wow.
He's gone now, God bless him, and we still use the term. All these years later, and it's been passed down to another generation, and we had the distinct honor of meeting your Uncle Tito and his family locally, and to the extent that we actually, both big families got together, and we have a photograph of the Burke family with the Walendas, and it can't tell you how much you guys mean to us and what an inspiration you are. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. I
Dave,
appreciate those stories mean so much.
That's great. Summoning the inner Walenda. Great phrase. Dave, thanks for that call. Nick Walenda, I'm curious. You know, you've spoken a lot about your great-grandfather. You mentioned the fact that he was probably too old to be up there when he died. How old is too old to do this kind of business?
Well, you know, it really is more about physical capability. And I've sort of set up a protocol that I have to do, you know, 20 pull-ups, and I have to be able to hold onto the wire for at least 20 minutes, and certain things that I want to have as a check mark. And when I can't do that anymore, that's when I'm too old. I don't think it's a specific age. I think it's more physical ability than anything. And I do, though, start planning now. And part of the reason I plan now to 45 to 50 is because mentally it'll be a strain, I'm sure, because this is what I love to do. This is my passion. It'd be like a golfer, you know, losing his left hand or his right hand or something. You know, you can't do it anymore. And it's hard to even prepare for that now. And I think that's the challenge that my great grandfather had, was the fact that he had so much passion for what he did. He didn't want to give up.
I understand. I've got to ask you before you go today, what's next? I mean, you took on this enormous challenge last week, walking across the Little Colorado River Gorge in Arizona. What are you setting your sights on next?
You know, there's walks all over the world that I want to do. And I have dreams of walking in Egypt over the pyramids. I have dreams of walking over, you know, into the top of the Eiffel Tower. And I really want to work on a walk in New York City. It's a dream of mine to do a big walk in New York City. I've got my eyes on a couple buildings that might work. I'd love to do a mile over Central Park. So there are many things in the city that I'd like to do. And I think that's really what I'm going to start focusing on.
But there's no specific one that you're already making plans for.
No, that's correct. There's nothing that I'm specifically working on. As far as these large walks, I do many, many of these walks. You know, I do all sorts of events. For example, I just did the Tropicana in Atlantic City, where I brought in 250,000 people to see me walk that day. So really, it's I do many, many of these, probably one, sometimes two a month around the world. But the big, big ones are usually years in the making.
Well, Nick Walenda, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I want to thank you so much for coming in and joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That's Nick Walenda. His new memoir is Balance, a story of faith, family, and life on the line. You can continue the conversation. You can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook and at On Point Radio. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.